May it please the court, justices, your honors, Chief Justice Steele, counsel. My name is Andy Carmine. I'm here on behalf of Appellant Timber Products. Seated with me is Lushana Gorham, representing Appellant Berger Brothers, and Maria Newell, representing Appellant Christiana Care Health Services. This is an appeal of the January 6, 2012 Superior Court decision in this consolidated matter. The issue is whether or not 19 Delaware Administrative Code Section 1341, 5.5.1, is a valid regulation. That is really the only issue today. The regulation modified the existing and recently revised workers' compensation statute to include a 45-day period to appeal a utilization review decision pursuant to Section 2322FJ of the existing statute.
Maybe you could start with explaining to a novice like me what this utilization decision is all about.
I will. I believe that examining this regulation and its validity does require some background into why they created the regulation and why even before that the statute was amended.
And this is in from the record?
Correct. The utilization, I should back up and say that on January 17, 2007, Senate Bill 1 was introduced and enacted by the General Assembly, the 144th General Assembly. And it significantly revised and amended the existing Delaware Workers' Compensation Act, Titles 18 and 19. It was enacted in order to remedy the problem of high insurance premiums, which were being driven by high medical costs. To remedy this problem, Senate Bill 1 created what is called the Healthcare Advisory Panel, or HCAP. This panel was charged with the duty of carrying out the provisions of Senate Bill 1, mainly developing a fair healthcare cost containment system in the arena of workers' compensation. This panel was comprised of 17 members, 9 of which were from the medical provider community. Under the authority and the direction of the statute, HCAP established two systems. The first was the healthcare payment system, or a fee schedule, and the second was the practice guidelines, the healthcare practice guidelines. The fee schedule set forth the maximum allowable payments for medical treatment, and the practice guidelines established uniformity and boundaries for medical care being rendered to injured workers. To facilitate these systems, certain requirements were also established. Number one, a doctor had to become certified in order to enjoy the privileges of this system, and also had to accept payment for his services pursuant to the fee schedule. Insurance carriers had to pay bills within 30 days of their receipt unless they chose to challenge same. This was a quid pro quo, if you will, between medical providers and insurance carriers. The medical providers were getting prompt payment, and the insurance carriers were paying less for the medical services. And to answer your question, Chief Justice, to establish this goal that HCAP created, the goal of these two systems working effectively, they developed the utilization review process. This is where an insurance carrier, upon receipt of a medical bill, instead of getting a defense medical examination doctor to determine whether or not it's reasonable or necessary, or denying it based on the fact that they don't believe it's reasonable, what they do is they file with the Department of Labor a request for a decision whereby they determine whether or not the specific medical treatment is within the Delaware healthcare practice guidelines. Once a UR is requested and filed, the package is analyzed by a third-party nurse or physician within that specialty of that medical treatment. And that unbiased physician renders an opinion as to whether or not this specific treatment pertaining to that bill which has been denied is within the Delaware healthcare practice guidelines. If it's compliant with the guidelines, the carrier must pay promptly per the fee schedule. If it's non-compliant, the carrier can deny the bill. The system was designed to be lawyerless, which is important. It wanted to remove these challenges of very specific medical treatment from the arduous litigation process of going before the Industrial Accident Board and having months and months before a hearing is determined. It wanted to streamline that to have a swift resolution.
There is review ultimately by the Industrial Accident Board of that decision, isn't there?
There is, and that really is what this argument today hinges upon, is the appeal process of a utilization review decision. So when the utilization review decision comes in and it either determines that the treatment is compliant or non-compliant, any party, HCAP realizing that this was a binding decision, a UR decision is binding, determined that the parties, the interested parties, mainly the claimant, the insurance carrier or the employer, and the physician who provided that treatment, must be able to have the opportunity to appeal that decision. And that appeal is by petition before the Industrial Accident Board for de novo review, meaning it goes before the Industrial Accident Board now on the standard of whether it's reasonable or necessary. Unfortunately, the exact statutory language that
Industrial Accident Board is not bound in any way by the UR.
Well, the Industrial Accident Board is almost not a part of the process until the appeal comes. And you're correct. When the appeal comes, they are not bound by the UR. It's admissible, but the standard changes from whether or not it's in compliance with the guidelines to whether or not it's reasonable or necessary treatment. It's not, they're not bound by the UR, correct.
Okay. I want to, since your time is running short, I want to ask you one question and get your response to it. Let's assume, hypothetically, that a claimant, it's his, he's gone through a course of medical treatment, it's the very last one in his mind, he believes, in his mind, and the choice, and he's late. So all your arguments about, well, there's still other areas where claims can be made for other services and things like that, this is the only one left. That, if it's not made within 45 days, it would be barred under the regulation. Why isn't that inconsistent with the no statute of limitations for 5 years?
Your Honor, I'm competent to answer that question because I have briefed the issue. I did want to reserve co-counsel to respond to the inconsistencies between a statute of limitations compared to an appeal period. But to answer your question specifically, in the appellant's opinion, that situation wouldn't come about only because the only time a utilization appeal period of 45 days is at issue is when that treatment has been UR'd and the treatment's been deemed non-compliant and the carrier denies that. Then that 45-day clock begins to tick. And it's not a clock against that individual's 5 years to bring a claim. It's simply whether or not that specific last date of treatment, if you will, that you're speaking of, whether he has the opportunity to bring that last date of treatment before the board. If his treatment prior to that, the week prior, the month prior, was paid for by the carrier, his 5 years has now been continued again. And statute of limitations continues to run. And it's not implemented by that one 45-day appeal period. He can't challenge that one visit, that one last visit. He can't challenge that one specific visit. But it's only narrowed to what the utilization review decision said is non-compliant and denied, not the totality of his treatment.
So the one last visit must be brought within 45 days or it's barred?
The only thing that needs to be brought within 45 days is what exactly the utilization review decision said was non-compliant, whether that was one visit of chiropractic treatment or 70 visits of chiropractic treatment over the course of however long. It's really a matter of, that is the only issue that has to be brought within 45 days before the board, or else that the opportunity to petition to the board for that medical treatment to be approved is lost. But his statute of limitations is not lost. His claim's not lost. He can continue to treat. He can continue to bring claims within 5 years. He just doesn't have the opportunity to challenge that exact treatment in that utilization review decision.
So that claim is barred.
Correct. That claim is barred. Right.
Thank you.
Yes.
Please.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice Steele and Justices. May it please the Court, my name is Lushana Gorm, and I represent the appellate, Berger Brothers. If I can just build upon what my co-counsel has pretty much stated, and particularly in the case involving my client, Berger Brothers, just to give some insight, the treatment that was presented under the utilization review to be reviewed was treatment that was proposed by Dr. Grossinger, which means treatment had not gone yet. It had not been done. It was just a question of, does this type of treatment fall within the healthcare practice guidelines? And to that extent, the utilization review decision was, particularly as to one of the procedures, which was called a spine 6 biomedical procedure, the UR said, at this time, looking at the claimant's medical history, it's not time for this particular treatment, and therefore it doesn't fall within the healthcare practice guidelines. It's not in compliance. The other treatment was 2 weeks of physical therapy. It said, we don't have enough information to render a decision as to that issue. So really no decision was ever rendered to the physical therapy that was proposed. So I think, and just expounding upon what counsel has said, the utilization review is very specific. It is really about the medical treatment that may be questioned at that moment. For example, in the Munez case.
Wait, can I interrupt you there?
Sure.
I understand there's a 45-day appeal period, at least under the regulation. You seem to be suggesting that if a claimant is getting a course of treatment, pretty much at any point during that course of treatment, the employer or perhaps even the doctor can ask for a review to determine whether this is going to be acceptable medical treatment, right?
That is correct.
Okay. So they go through that process, and the panel says, no, based upon X, Y, and Z, it's not necessary yet, or we don't see the need for it, or whatever. Can they come back a month later?
Yes.
And say, we're still looking for the ability to get these particular treatments, just like we were a month ago, and we think that you ought to reconsider your decision because X, Y, or Z reasons.
Generally, what you would see is, in the circumstance of, say, for example, say it's a surgery, there have been utilization review decisions that said, because that we're the fusion or the type of surgery that's being suggested, this patient doesn't fall in this guidelines of being acceptable for this type of surgery because maybe diagnostics haven't been done that should be done based on the healthcare practice guidelines. So once maybe say that claimant goes and gets those diagnostic studies done and then again goes forward to see if they can have this surgery, it would then be reevaluated. So
what I'm trying to get at is it seems pretty straightforward if somebody is looking for a surgery and the decision is we don't know enough about whether you can withstand that surgery or whether it will be beneficial or whatever, you know, we need to see an MRI or we need to see blood work or whatever it is. And then so the person gets denied and they come back 3 weeks later, they've got all the missing information. What if it's not one of those kind of cases, but it's rather somebody whose doctor is saying, you know, you need physical therapy probably for the next 6 months, once a week or twice a week, whatever, because that's the only way you're going to get your strength back or whatever. And the panel says, no, physical therapy hasn't been effective on you for the last 3 months. We're not going to approve doing it for the next 3 months. Okay. All right?
Yes.
Does that person get to come back a month later or even 2 weeks later and say, you know, I really need that physical therapy. Could you reconsider?
In that context, I'd have to say no. Unless, for some reason, within that month period, there's some documented change in condition. And I think I've put that out there. If for some reason, say, a claimant's condition changes from what's already in their medical record, saying they got worse, really, really bad, to where, say, they can't get up now, for instance, then that medical condition has now changed. And that changes the circumstances around what this is. The utilization review is very fact-specific. So if something has changed within that condition, it's possible that that can now be brought forward again to see if that treatment will now be paid for. And it may even be something, it may not have to be brought back through utilization review. The carrier may just now pay it because now you have satisfied what the utilization reviewer said needs to be done.
Okay.
So in that instance, you've got the difference between that 45-day appeal period, which has no effect on the statute of limitations. And I think
did the General Assembly say that?
The General Assembly did not necessarily bring forth the 45-day period. No. They didn't. All they said was that they wanted the process to be a prompt process so that we could streamline this process, get these claims resolved, these disputes, and keep moving forward.
Well, but why isn't this an issue for the General Assembly to solve?
It could possibly be. At this point, I can't say it is or it isn't, but I think what was hammered on is whether or not this process helped assist within that idea or intent that this be a prompt system, not to just sit out there for 5 years and claims just be sitting there and no one have an obligation to take care of them or pay for them. So I think it was more of an idea of we'll put a process in place and then let's give it a time frame, because in 45 days you can determine whether or not you agree with a decision or you don't agree with it and then go forward. But I think it was a way designed to not have these claims just floating out there in the abyss for no reason. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Maria Newell on behalf of Christiana Care. I think what is important for you to know is the healthcare advisory panel was made up with a diverse membership, including doctors, who came up with protocols for certain injuries. If you have a lumbar spine injury, this is what is the reasonable protocol for treatment. And there are built into that, if you fall outside of the protocols, there's the ability to look at that. But they say, for example, a lumbar spine injury, 26 weeks of physical therapy is what's reasonable for that.
I think I, for one, have a question about how rational the approach may be, or any question that when there was intense study of how to reform workers' comp, that this is one of the issues that came up and was discussed. The very narrow issue for us is, how do we tell from the existing five-year statute of limitations and this process that the legislature even thought about the impact of a five-year statute of limitations on the removal of a particular specific treatment from a five-year statute of limitations and reducing it to 45 after the review for appeal to the Industrial Accident Board? How do we reconcile the five-year statute of limitations with the 45-year appeal time for review with the IAB?
Okay, here's how you reconcile it. The legislator came up with a process to handle medical treatment expenses. There are compensable bills where an accident has been acknowledged versus where they have not. The compensable bills go to the UR process. In developing this process, they said, we're going to create utilization review, and then we are going to give the power to the HCAP panel to develop the rules for putting this UR process into effect. So the legislator did not contemplate the 5 years. They say, we've developed the process. We want these bills to go through the utilization process, but we want the health cap people to decide how that process is going to work and what are the procedural rules that will apply to that health care process. And the procedural rules that will apply will be developed by health care cap, implemented by the Department of Labor, which is what they did in the regulation by putting the 45-day
appeal
period. It's not a statute.
I understand the devolvement issue in suggesting that there be a regulation or at least regulatory authority. But is there any record that shows that the legislature thought about or discussed the impact of the 5-year statute of limitations on any regulation that might emanate from this devolution of power?
Not that I am aware. But with any decision that comes from the Industrial Accident Board or a tribunal like the UR process, they make decisions that certain benefits are entitled and certain benefits are not entitled. And there is an appeal period to that decision, and that doesn't affect the 5 years. The board or the UR can say, this particular benefit you're not entitled to, but that doesn't affect your entitlement to more treatment, different treatment, that same treatment possibly by another medical care provider.
But this regulation doesn't, let's assume, at least in one case here, the board very reluctantly dismissed the case. Let's assume hypothetically that the board just completely disagrees with the UR determination. Under this regulation, they are powerless to act. Is that right?
They are powerless to act only when a claimant has not, within the time frame necessary, perfected their rights by appealing to the IAB for a de novo trial. And let's not forget, the claimants get notice of denial before the UR. The carriers must issue notice directly to the claimant with copies to their attorney if they're represented, indicating they are denying a medical bill, and that it is forward to UR. So before.
The de novo review, was that expressly addressed by the General Assembly, or is that in the regulation as well?
It is in the statute itself.
Okay, so the General Assembly intended that the board does de novo review.
Yes. And so the claimant then has notice his bill is being denied, notice it's going to utilization review, then gets the utilization review, and still after that has 45 days to take action.
How does the claimant know that?
How does he know what? I'm sorry.
That he's got 45 days.
Because that's the law.
Is there a notice given? Is there something that says you've got 45 days, at the end of 45 days, you've got no more right to get this treatment?
I have not personally seen what is sent by the Department of Labor to the claimant to indicate that, but just like any other rules, ignorance of the law or rules is not a defense, and the claimant knows that his rights are being affected by that decision. It says right in the decision that this particular treatment is not being covered.
Well, wouldn't it be inconsistent with the idea that the General Assembly intended there to be the opportunity for de novo review, and yet a claimant doesn't even know about that?
Does the claimant know about his right to file a petition in a worker comp claim case when he has one to start with? Does the claimant know that he's entitled to total, partial, permanency disfigurement? You know, there's many aspects of a worker comp claim that the claimant themselves may not know. That's part of the reason why they seek legal counsel. These decisions are also sent to the medical care provider whose treatment is being denied. And as of June 11th, they are now also sent to claimant attorneys who are representing in these cases. So.
But without representation, an individual who's denied is given no notice of the 45-day appeal period.
I can't say that. I would have to go back and actually look at what's sent by the Department of Labor to them to see if it tells in there. But standing here right now, I don't know that.
Okay.
Anything further?
No.
Thank you.
Could you start out and answer my question, if you can?
First, I wanted to say good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Mike Galbraith. I'm the attorney here on behalf of the appellees, all three of them. Cecil Palomino, Salvador Avila Hernandez, and Julio Munoz. To answer your question, Your Honor, actually, the answer is located in the appendix filed by Appellant Berger Brothers at A4. A3 and A4 of that appendix are, I believe, copies of the March 16, 2010 UR decision that was issued in that case. The decision itself is probably about a paragraph on that first page. But on A4, there's another paragraph that describes the appeal process, letting know, and it pretty much mirrors the language in Section 2322, capital F, subsection J, that provides that any party who wishes to dispute the UR determination may file a petition with the Department of Labor within 45 days from the receipt date of this notice. To my knowledge, again, having never received one of these personally, I don't know if there is other information sent by the department along with the decision. My understanding is that there is not, and that single paragraph, which in my experience appears on just about every, I can't think of a single UR decision I've seen over the past four years now.
That there's no issue about the claimant getting notice of 45 days to appeal. That's not what's
in the ordinary case. Before. There wouldn't be, but we don't
I'm
have.
I'm talking about the ordinary case. I'm talking about this.
We don't have ordinary cases here. Here we have cases with three individuals.
Is it an issue with this case or not?
Well, with two of the individuals, they both brought the UR decisions to my office at least a month, and in one case, several months after the appeal deadline had already run. English is not their first language. I believe it was actually in Mr. Palomino's case. He had brought it several months later.
Let me make it easier for you. Is there any issue about whether or not they received notice in writing that they had 45 days to appeal the decision?
I didn't get what you were asking at first. I do now. No, there's no issue at all in these cases.
Tell us what the issue is then.
The issue in this case, as addressed at least by me, not by my counsel opposing, the issue is whether the Department of Labor exceeded its rulemaking authority in adopting by regulation a 45-day time limit to appeal these UR decisions. What's complicating that factor is the fact that when you have individuals like these three who have been represented by counsel for years, and in all their experience, save for the UR decisions issued in this case, their attorney gets copies of everything that the department or the Division of Industrial Affairs, anything that is sent to the claimant is also sent to council. That includes copies of board decisions.
Would the regulation be valid if it included a notice to council?
Interestingly enough, it actually does now. Shortly after the briefs.
So is it valid then?
If you consider the fact that the, well, I guess if you assume that the department had the authority to implement a 45-day time period, then arguably it would be somewhat of a moot issue. But I don't think that that is the case.
Would this outcome be any different if instead of saying the claim is barred, it said the claim is waived?
I don't think that it would, because I don't believe it even says that it's barred. It says the decision of a utilization review company shall be final and binding upon parties unless within 45 days.
Final and binding if the claim is waived.
I don't believe it would be. I think, Justice Ridgely, you actually brought up an interesting point earlier on questioning for Ms. Newell. You asked that if we assume that the IAB disagrees with the regulation, the 45-day period. You noted that there was even a reservation, I believe it was actually in the Munoz case, a reservation in signing the order dismissing their petitions. Is the board powerless to act with that regulation in there? I know that the board, in granting all three of these orders, did feel that that was the case, but I don't think it necessarily is, because the 45-day period, similar to any other court rule or regulation, is discretionary, and it would be subject to extension.
What makes it discretionary?
Well, I guess to answer that, I would have to take a step back for a second and consider whether the Department of Labor and the Industrial Action Board, by extension, could limit its own jurisdiction through regulation when the authorizing statute had no time limit or any limit at all, other than providing for an appeal de novo of a decision for it.
Well, isn't a regulation, if it's validly enacted and within the authority of the body that adopted it, it has the effect of law, doesn't it?
Yes, I believe it would. But if we consider the fact that the Superior Court actually has discretion under its rules, Rule 6, in fact, this court has discretion to extend times or deadlines if we consider a Rule 15 motion out of time for it.
Not for an initial appeal.
No, but the initial appeal is actually set by statute as opposed to regulation. And that's what we have in this case, because the General Assembly, the only intent that we can actually glean is what's indicated in Senate Bill 1, which was later codified into the relevant section of 2322 capital F, J, the UR provision here, which only provides that if a party disagrees with a UR determination, they may file an appeal with the Department of Labor for de novo review.
Okay. Am I understanding you correctly that you're saying the 45-day time limit, it would be acceptable from your standpoint if, first of all, attorneys were also getting notice of the decision and not just the claimant, and second of all, if the board understood, as you believe is the case, that if an out-of-time petition is filed, that is more than 45 days, that the notwithstanding that regulation, the board still has the power under whatever circumstances it deems is appropriate to consider the matter nonetheless.
Would it be a short answer just to say yes? I do actually agree that the initial issue that we were experiencing with this regulation, because you have to consider the fact that for the first year that the healthcare payment system and this whole UR procedure was in place, there was absolutely no time limit at all. It wasn't until I think the effective date was actually June 1, 2009 for Regulation 5.5.1, which added two key provisions to the UR regulation. One was that the department send by certified mail a copy of the UR decision to the claimant, the provider at issue, the doctor, and the employer. So there was no provision in there to send it to claimant's counsel
there is now.
They just amended it, actually, just over a month ago it went into effect, I believe in mid-June.
Okay, so what I'm trying to get at is that all we've got left as an issue from your perspective, at least moving forward, is the question of whether this regulation precludes the board from considering an out-of-time petition.
Yes, if we assume that the Department of Labor did have the authority from the General Assembly in the first place to set the 45-day time limit.
Well, what would be the basis for the board's authority to set a lesser time period than 5 years?
I don't believe it had one. Not without a specific grant.
It's hypothetical that assuming that the board regulation was drafted in a way to provide discretion to set one filed of 50 days, and the board said no because we think everything should be filed within 49 days.
I think one of the grants of that authority, I guess, that would make it more in line with the statute, the regulations more in line with the statute, is if there was a conflict clause within the regulation or within the statute, whichever way to do it, probably the regulation, though, providing that if the regulation is inconsistent with a more broad either common law principle or statutory principle, that the more restricted regulation would actually govern over the statute or other contradictory law, similar to what the courts are actually providing. The Superior Court is actually provided in, I believe it's Title 10, Section, I keep wanting to say 561, but I keep forgetting if that's the right section or not. But it actually has such a provision in there. In
statute
terms of
saying the rules govern when there's a conflict with statute on procedure.
Yes. Under that scenario, I would be hard pressed to find, again with the same assumption, I would be hard pressed to find another reason of why they couldn't implement this 45-day period. I believe that the healthcare
requires again legislative fixing.
Yes, and that very well may be the end result, depending on your decision in this case. I believe, and it's been mentioned at various CLEs and other meetings in the workers' comp world, that ultimately, if the 45-day appeal period is invalidated, like the Superior Court did below, the result may be just to ask the legislature to amend the statute to include some period like that. But again, this was actually all before the fact that a month ago, they actually agreed to.
Do you have any view on what the record would suggest, whether it's a legislative record or any report from the body that studied this reform of workers' comp, that there was a conclusion reached that it would not be necessary to amend the five-year statute of limitations in order to put this regulatory process into effect?
I'm glad you actually brought that up, Chief Justice Steele, because I actually wrote that down earlier. You had asked a similar question, I believe it was to Ms. Newell earlier. There is absolutely no indication in either the synopsis to Senate Bill 1, the stated intent in the actual statute, or either in the public meeting notes or proposed orders from the healthcare advisory panel when they were holding the public meetings on these changes.
And as I understand the historical background here, this isn't someone in the General Assembly introducing a bill at someone's request that went through a committee in a day and was on the floor of the House and Senate for a day and then passed and signed by the governor. This scheme was the product of a thoughtful, long process with public input before it was implemented, correct?
Yes.
And yet this issue never came up?
Not from any record I've been able to glean it from, either in the Register of Regulations, as again I said, synopses.
Without the nuances we discussed earlier, tell me precisely why you believe that this 45-day regulatory appeal time to the Industrial Accident Board from the review is inconsistent with the five-year statute of limitations.
The perfect example is, I believe it was in Mr. Munoz's case, where the UR was actually for proposed treatment. So treatment that his doctor said he thought he needed to treat the work-related injury. The employer submitted it to UR as it was entitled to under this whole system. The UR decision comes back denying the claim. A copy of that decision goes to Mr. Munoz, who is not a sophisticated individual, assumes that his attorney gets a copy of the decision because his attorney gets copies of everything that
he
gets.
Let's leave notice to the attorney out of it. Let's assume, for the sake of this inconsistency argument, that he's a PhD in rocket science and he's represented by F. Lee Bailey. We still have an argument about whether this is consistent or inconsistent with the five-year statute of limitations. Mm-hmm. Articulate that argument.
So the UR decision comes back. If he does not file a petition within 45 days from the day he receives the petition, he will be barred from presenting the claim for the same treatment that his doctor already thinks that he needs that he hasn't gotten yet into the future. Unless there is some...
But he's not precluded from alternative treatments or continuing to be compensated for his injuries or any other issue, just this specific, precise, proposed treatment, correct?
Yes, although I think the argument may still come up anyway, but I think ultimately the board would actually conclude that it was just with regards to the treatment that was requested, well, that UR was requested for.
Can I accept the representation made earlier that if it was resubmitted or reproposed, but there were more particularized facts to justify that treatment, it would be reconsidered by the review committee, even if it was after 45 days, and based upon that change in factual circumstances, they could say yes or no?
That could actually happen. It would, of course, be up to the employer to request UR of that additional treatment. There is no mechanism in place for a reconsideration between the doctor and the physician conducting the UR, assuming it is a physician, which it isn't always, depending on...
Wait a second. You're not saying that it's only the employer that can use this procedure, right?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Only the employer can ask for a review.
Or the insurance carrier. It is
the doctor can't ask for it?
No.
Can't ask for it?
We heard earlier that the healthcare provider who proposed the treatment could submit it. That's not so?
The situation would have to be that there was some documented either change in condition or some decisions have come back. I believe there was a suggestion that if there was an MRI or some other study, if there was a recommendation for surgery, if the doctor did obtain those studies or complied with the UR, then that wouldn't be an issue. But for the most part, what you're talking about, I'm sorry.
Let me put it to you this way. The doctor asks for approval before the UR, gets denied. The claimant misses the 45-day time limit, so the board dismisses his petition. The claimant or his doctor then asks for another UR with respect to essentially the same treatment, and the panel says, no, we rejected it already, we're rejecting it again. 45 days, he can now file his appeal.
There is no mechanism within the statute or the regulations for a claimant or a treating physician to request utilization review of either proposed or provided treatment. It's reserved only for the employer or the insurance carrier, and that's directly from the language in the statute, and it's mirrored in the regulation itself. An employer or insurance carrier may engage in the utilization review process to review, I believe it's proposed or provided treatment for compliance with the healthcare practice guidelines. So all that the UR process really does is they look at if it's treatment that's already been given, they review medical records, or if it's treatment that's being proposed, they still review medical records, and review that treatment for whether or not it was compliant with the practice guidelines, which consist of, I believe it's 7 different treatment guidelines. The treatment guidelines are, I guess the easiest way to think about it is a generally accepted either amount or type of treatment for the most common injuries that we see in the workers' comp cases. When the statute initially passed, there was only five. A year later, in addition to the 45-day appeal period, there was an additional guideline that was added, which was for the cervical. And since we've now have one for the lower extremities, I believe that actually was the seventh one for it. So that's all the UR process does. And if the treatment is within the guidelines, there's a presumption of reasonableness and necessity for the treatment. So either side can file an appeal of a UR decision. And if it goes to the board, while the board is not bound by the UR decision, they've actually developed an understanding that depending on the findings of UR and who actually filed the appeal, the burden of proof for the parties could actually change depending on their situation. For instance, in all three of these claims, it would be the claimant's burden of proving that the treatment was reasonable, necessary, and causally related, just as it had been beforehand under Section 2322 before this whole system went into effect just over 4 years ago. But conversely, if the UR decisions certify the treatment as compliant with the guidelines and the employer filed the appeal, the employer actually has the burden of overcoming the presumption of reasonableness and necessity. And the board is free to choose either way, and the guidelines specifically state that there is some treatment that can not be out, or I guess can be outside of the guidelines.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
There's 1 minute and 15 seconds left for the other side, and I would ask you to huddle, and one of you please answer for me whether or not only the employer or the comp carrier can seek utilization review. This isn't Jeopardy. I'm not going to ring a bell on you. You're the chosen victim. Go ahead.
The answer to the specific question is that the statute only provides for a carrier or an employer to file a utilization review, to request utilization review. However, it doesn't leave the physician or the claimant without the opportunity of getting an opinion on whether or not the treatment is going to be accepted or whether it's inside the practice guidelines. A physician can request an insurance carrier, are you going to approve this surgery I'm proposing? If not, they can go ahead with it and do it anyway, or they can face the consequences, or they can choose not to do it. And the claimant can file a petition directly with the Industrial Accident Board to have treatment approved by the board. They're not bound by the utilization review process. It's only the carrier that's bound by this process.
All right,
for
acknowledgement. The bottom line is, at least the employer or the comp carrier are the catalyst for the utilization review in that first instance.
I would say that not only are they the only ones allowed to do a utilization review, they're bound by it. They're almost at a disadvantage because they have to do utilization review. They can't go before the board and say, we don't think this is reasonable. The claimant can go before the board and say, we think this is reasonable. The insurance carrier doesn't have that option anymore. They have to go through the avenue of utilization review.
May I ask a question? Sure. Hypothetical two workers' compensation claimants. Claimant A, they have the exact same injury, exact same circumstance. Claimant A, the employer requests utilization review. Claimant B, employer does not request utilization review for the exact same procedure, medical procedure.
Mm-hmm.
Claimant A is denied and does not receive or apply for review by the board within 45 days. Claimant B, the insurance carrier says, we're not going to pay because we don't think it's appropriate. And that claimant files on day 50 with the board. Different outcomes because of that procedure?
I'm just going to ask you to clarify your hypothetical briefly to say, did claimant B, was a utilization review filed for claimant B?
No.
Okay. Then that situation, the insurance carrier has no choice but to pay. If the insurance carrier does not choose to do a utilization review on a procedure that's been performed, they have to pay within 30 days. They've waived their right to challenge that bill at all before the board, before any tribunal. They're paying it, or they face penalties of $1,000 or up to $5,000 fines for not paying that bill if they pay it on the 31st day.
So the only way to deny a medical treatment claim is to request a UR?
On an acknowledged claim that falls within the Delaware Healthcare Practice Guidelines. It's limited. It's just for neck, low back, upper extremities, cumulative, chronic. There's a series of treatments that fall within the practice guidelines, and it must be acknowledged. If they believe the treatment's not causally related to the acknowledged injury, then they don't have to use utilization review. They're prohibited from doing it, actually. But if the scenario is that both treatments from A and B, both claimants, are within the Delaware Healthcare Practice Guidelines, claimant A, the insurance carrier says, we don't think this treatment looks reasonable, we're going to submit a UR request, and it comes out non-compliant with the Delaware Healthcare Practice Guidelines, then that claimant has the opportunity within 45 days to appeal that decision. Claimant B, if the insurance carrier says, we're not paying this bill, and the treatment happens and the bill sits there for 31 days, the insurance carrier not only has to pay that bill, but they're being fined for not paying within the 30 days. They have no remedy.
Can I just ask one more thing? A claimant has some particular treatment that his doctor recommends. Can the claimant just go directly to the board and say, this is a petition for payment of compensation, and let the board consider it first, last, and always, and have nothing to do with this panel?
I don't see why not. The claimant is always able to petition the board for medical treatment.
Well, then why couldn't the claimant do that with respect to one that the panel has already rejected?
I think because they don't have to, because the doctor is free not only to perform the treatment, but the claimant can undergo the treatment, and the doctor can perform the treatment. They don't need pre-authorization from utilization review. Except in the case of surgery, and this is where we begin
we're getting off of what my question is,
okay,
which is, you make it sound as if the UR process is a separate mechanism that can be used but doesn't have to be used, and that the claimant always, regardless of what the UR decision is or whether they appealed it within 45 days or not, the claimant can always go to the board directly, file a petition, and, you know, ask the board to determine whether this treatment is compensable or not, even if the UR has just finished saying 50 days ago that it's not.
It's a different scenario if there has been a UR. I agree with you. If a UR has said this treatment is not compliant with the Delaware Healthcare Practice Guidelines, then that 45-day clock is ticking for the claimant to do something about it, unless the circumstances of he can go to a different doctor and have the same treatment.
Right.
He can have a change in his condition.
The
caveats apply.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Counselor. Take the case under advisement and adjourn.
Rise.